hammering away at that and saying, you know, we need to use diplomacy and relax about Russia and deal with them as
you mean Obama
a co-equal partner. Obama should be saying that, exactly. And instead, he's letting, you know, he's basically echoing McCain's policy.
Robert Dreyfus, we're going to have to leave it there. Investigative reporter, contributing editor at The Nation, his latest book, Devil's Game, How the United States Helped Unleash Fundamentalists. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkshire, Hoto Kadus, Aaron Mate, Angela Comet, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Masood, and Robbie Caron. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
And you heard yesterday's edition of Democracy Now! As part of our retrospective on yesterday here on WUSB Stony Brook. Thank you, Stony Brook Internet people, for failing us yet again. Unfortunately, we cannot play yesterday's concert billboard as that's been erased, so we're going to have to play today's.
Hey, it's DJ Ev with your concert billboard for Tuesday, September 30th, 2008. At the Crazy Donkey at 6:30, it's Less Than Jake. And at Terminal 5 in Manhattan, it's Ben Folds with Missy Higgins. At the Knitting Factory Main Space at 7, it's Hollywood Undead with special guest Prophet. Everlast and the Lords of the Underground are at the Hero Ballroom at the Maritime Hotel. And at Union Hall in Brooklyn, it's These United States, Band of Annuals, and The Loom. If you're a local band, venue, or promoter, and you want to get your listings on the concert billboard, send an email to scene, that's S-C-E-N-E, at WUSB.FM. And as always, thank you for listening to the concert billboard and to WUSB Stony Brook.
And it is WUSB Stony Brook. The time is 2 minutes after 6 o'clock. Time once again for today's edition of Off the Wall. And I'm sorry if I seem a little bit, frustrated, but it really is frustrating when you come in here and there's always something else wrong. We had planned to play some things off the internet, and of course, there is no internet apparently for the entire campus here at the State University of New York at Stony Brook, which is amazing considering how technologically literate we're supposed to be, but this happens all the time here. I'm not even sure if we're broadcasting to the internet. I'd like to know. I'd like to know from the people out there who are listening from computers and not from radios. Just ring our phone line. Let me know that it's actually streaming, because I'd like to take some phone calls today. We have some interesting issues to discuss. It would make things very difficult if you couldn't hear us, though. I know the radio station is on the air. I know people locally can get us. But once again, we have to wonder if the internet stream is working. Our number 631-632-9872. We'll be taking phone calls later, but I see the phone ringing, but you know, you did that too fast. It takes like a minute and a half for the signal to get out there, so you're not fooling anybody. So if I look over there in a couple of minutes and see a lot of lines lit up, then I'll know that we're actually getting there, or maybe nobody's listening. There's always that possibility too. I can't say I blame you. The number of times that we're down kind of makes you frustrated. A lot of people don't come back. I know the frustration. But that's how it is sometimes. We're still trying to figure out this technology business here at Stony Brook. We're still picking up the pieces from when this was a big mud pit on Long Island. Maybe it was better that way. How does an entire campus lose the internet? That's what I don't understand. And it's the second time in 2 weeks this has happened. And, you know, here's the thing. This is what really gets my goat, is that we're not allowed to have an outside independent internet provider. We have to use the university. That's part of the bureaucratic business that we have to deal with. We can't even, on this campus, you cannot even turn on a computer and have a Wi-Fi network without getting somebody's permission. That's how insane it is. So we're all kind of cut off here. I guess we could use our phones and connect to the internet that way. I think that's allowed. Can we do that, please? Or do we have to ask permission for that as well? Well, all right, I got that out of my system, but unfortunately we won't be able to play the things that we had planned to play today. And it's too bad, really, because there were some pretty interesting sound bites. But whatever, we'll just deal. Okay, I'm convinced the stream is working because I see a bunch of calls coming in, so thank you. There's no further need to test, and we'll take phone calls later on. Thank you for helping us through this difficult time. I'm also a little stressed because just getting over here is it's always a pain. Always a pain because of the imbeciles on the highway. And once again, you know, it's... All right, here's the thing. On the way over, I was actually wondering to myself... When they make SUVs, do they even install turn signals anymore? Are there turn signals in SUVs? Because I'm convinced that they just don't exist, because apparently they're just never used. They're just never used. How many times have you seen somebody driving one of these huge vehicles and just going wherever they please without telling anybody, filling anybody in as to what their next move is going to be? It's kind of like the U.S. military, I guess. Maybe there's the same thinking behind it. But... In any event, I was wondering this, and I guess I got my answer because I was driving. I was on a four-lane highway, and I was only using one of the lanes, which is what you're supposed to do. Someone should tell these Hummers and SUVs and minivans that little tidbit of information. And as I'm driving in the right-hand lane, this SUV is going really, really slow in the left-hand lane for some reason. And as I'm passing him, he starts to turn into my lane. With the intent of, I guess, either pushing me off the road or hitting me or whatever, or most likely just not even seeing that I'm there, because these things are built in such a way that you can't see anything other than yourself in the rearview mirror. And so I do what I have to do. I honk my horn to say, don't do this anymore. Stop moving into my lane while I'm there. And he immediately goes back into his lane, and then you know what he does? Yeah, he turns on his turn signal and then does the exact same thing again. So yes, I found out that there are in fact turn signals on SUVs, but apparently the use of them is confusing to the people driving them. Yes, you can still hit people and knock them off the highway, but please signal first before you do it. I mean, good Lord, what in God's name was going through somebody's mind? You hear a car honking as you're turning into a lane, you swerve back knowing that somebody's there, and then you think they're going to disappear just because you put your turn signal on. It's unbelievable. I really think we should capture one of these creatures driving these things and study their brain. Because it can't be a human brain. It's got to be something else going on in there. The logic just doesn't... The synapses are not firing. Something is definitely askew. So, the more we can understand science, the better. You know, we learn new things every day. I saw in the news that it's snowing on Mars. There's all kinds of things happening that we don't understand. And the people driving these things, that's just yet another example of different kind of logic, non-human logic. Also on the way over here, on a little two-lane road, as I was rounding a curve, this other SUV comes rounding on the other side. One-third of his vehicle is in my lane. Oncoming traffic. And I had to swerve over to the shoulder to avoid getting hit head-on by this idiot. And you know what he does as he passes me? He honks his horn! He honks his horn! I'm in my lane, he's in my lane as well, and he's honking at me. Oh my God. I mean, I just wish that that these little encounters weren't so fleeting, that I had time to actually engage them in a raucous debate. Wouldn't that be nice? I just would like to... Maybe, you know, sit down and have a nice discussion with them as to just what they're doing here on this planet. What they hope to achieve. Maybe the kind of conversation you have in a bar. I have the greatest conversations in bars sometimes. And I feel sorry for people that can't do that. They can't just go out and, you know, have a few drinks or whatever and just start to actually converse with people like you wouldn't normally do. Some people think that's that's not appropriate, that you shouldn't be doing that, that you shouldn't let your guard down, you shouldn't be friendly with people, you should always keep your distance. I don't agree with that. I think it's the way to get to know people is actually to just hang out with them in a casual setting. And you can learn a lot about people this way. I had the most amazing conversation. This had to be a couple of weeks ago. I was in this place. Actually, I was in here as a favor to somebody. We were collecting from somebody, and they just needed someone to stand by the door. No kidding. That's really what it was. But we were in this place that was rather empty, but they had this this 1970s cover band playing. And it was really kind of sad because the whole bar was so empty. There was nobody in there except for these middle-aged guys playing the Eagles and all kinds of things from the 1970s. And the way they were doing it, the way they were actually playing the music, there was no passion. There was no joy. There was nothing in there to indicate that they were living out their dreams and having the time of their lives. Now, it looked like a job. It looked like they were hammering a nail into a wall or something. You know, unclogging a toilet. You know, it was with that same amount of passion that they were doing this job. Simply standing there, playing the bass guitar, playing the drums, playing whatever it is they had to play, and singing occasional words. And it was funny, too, because at one point, the guy doing the singing kept looking straight at me. And keep in mind, I was to the left of the stage. So he should have been looking straight ahead, but instead he had his head turned and was looking straight at me. And I was like, what is this guy, like, you know, swooning over me or something, or singing all kinds of ballads in my general direction? It was kind of unnerving. I didn't know what to make of it. And then I realized the only reason he was doing that was because that's where the words were propped up. He didn't even know the words to the songs he was singing. He had to look at the sheet of paper the whole time and hence cock his head in that direction. So that was pretty bizarre right there. But then what wound up happening, I just made the offhanded remark to somebody that I was standing near, that, hey, you know, look at that drummer. Doesn't he look a lot like a volunteer fireman? Because he did. He had that look, you know, the thick mustache and the short hair and kind of the beefy look. I'll bet that guy's a volunteer fireman. And the guy I was standing next to agreed, said, yeah, he does look like a volunteer fireman. That reminds me of when I got into this accident with this idiot driving an SUV. This woman was driving an SUV. It all comes back to accidents with SUVs, I know. That's what we talk about here on Long Island. And this guy was behind her and got out of his car. And I think he was a volunteer fireman, too. He looked like this guy. And he told her to stay in her car and not say anything and wait for the cops to get there. And he talked to the cops. And that bastard talked to the cops and kept that woman from admitting her guilt. And he just kept getting madder and madder. And then before I knew what was going on, he was like gesturing at the guy playing drums and basically transferring all his anger to him, saying that bastard volunteer fireman kept that woman from admitting guilt and talked to his friend, the cop. And, you know, you have to realize, first of all, we had no idea whether the guy playing drums or the guy at the accident scene was a volunteer fireman in the first place. But one thing that was pretty certain was that they weren't the same person. And yet all this anger was being directed at the guy playing drums, who I was sorry at this point that I had said, boy, this guy looks like a volunteer fireman. It's incredible how these conversations can just sort of take on a life of their own. But in the end, it all kind of worked out, and we talked about something else. I think we switched topics to sports and got angry about that instead. So, yeah, you can have really interesting and memorable conversations in strange settings, as long as you take them for what they're worth. And that's what I think people should be doing in general, is just having more conversations and not taking them too seriously. Kind of like, and this is my segue into the stock market, don't take it too seriously. Yes, it fell almost 1,000 points yesterday. That was fun. That was fun. But, you know, I don't know anything about any of this. I really don't. And I don't want to. Whenever I open up a newspaper and start reading about finances and loans and investment bankers and things like that, I just get this weird ache in my head and this desire to just jump out a window or something, because it does not interest me in the slightest. And there are people who live for this kind of thing. And that's fine, you know, whatever floats your boat. But I just, every moment I think of this, every moment I hear somebody talking about this, is one moment less of doing something that's really fun and enjoying ourselves and living out our time on this planet and getting the most out of it. who's moving stocks and bonds and finances and things like that? It's just a necessary evil, I suppose, but so many of us are obsessed with it. And so many of us know way too much about it. You know, back in the old days, back in the 1980s, there weren't financial TV channels. Now we have entire networks. The stock ticker is always going on every single channel, it seems. There are people who followed this kind of thing, but not everybody. So, in any event, thing is, not to get too caught up in it, to always have a way out, and to always know that in the end, patience probably will persevere. If you see the stock market plunging, that's not when you pull out all your money. I mean, any fool can tell you that. Because when it's plunging, that means that people are bailing and you're not going to get what you paid for whatever it is that you invested in. If you wait to the next day, it's probably going to go way up again. And that's exactly what happened today. And if it's not the next day, it's going to be the day after that. This is always what happens. I think someone said that the stock market collapse of 1929, inside of 6 months, it was back to where it was before the collapse. So if you had only waited and not thrown everything out, maybe you would have survived. Of course, a lot of people don't. A lot of people are really kind of screwed here. And I don't have easy answers. Nobody does. That's the thing. No one really knows what's going on. It does seem a bit weird, though, that we're throwing all this money and calling it a bailout. Whenever you call something a bailout, right there, that's going to turn off a lot of people because, well, it seems like a bailout, you know? It seems like you're basically giving these people a free pass for messing up, for doing something that they probably shouldn't have done in the first place, for making bad investments. Now, if you and I did that, there would be nobody to bail us out. And I think that's what people are looking at and saying. They're realizing that there's a double standard here. And it's strange when you see things coming up for votes. What is it? $800 billion? I don't even know. $700 billion? Okay. We're throwing $700 billion at this thing, and it seems to be pretty split between Democrats and Republicans. It's not one side taking one position, one side taking another position. There's a fair amount on each side that's opposed to it and a fair amount that's in favor of it. So it's definitely an issue that's dividing a lot of people and probably dividing within people. People have mixed feelings about this. But in the end, and I think it doesn't take much to predict this, it's going to pass somehow. And they're going to bail out these people, these institutions. And the question then is, will we continue making the same mistakes? Will we allow all this deregulation to continue happening? And will we see more debt in the future? That's what we have to watch out for. That's what we have to constantly be on the lookout for. This is the product of the last 20 years of deregulation and basically letting these institutions run wild. It's payback time. But you know, one way that they could definitely pass this thing like immediately, $700 billion, that's a lot of money. Now, with $700 billion, maybe you could chop $50 billion off that, you know? Probably wouldn't be that hard. So you say, hey, look, we just saved $50 billion. Well, now we have to support it. Something as simple as that would make this thing pass immediately. That's my tip for Congress. All right, that's all I want to talk about as far as that goes. I really would like to get into the political issues going on. And boy, is it something. Is it something. It's getting really, really interesting. And we have a fascinating debate coming up later this week. And I am really looking forward to it. I'm going to watch this thing, and I'm looking forward to seeing what is said. Oh, you thought I was talking about... No. I'm not talking about the Joe Biden, Sarah Palin thing. Yeah, that's this week too, isn't it? The vice presidential debate. No, I'm talking about the real election going on to the north. The Canadian election. Maybe you've heard of it. It was called last month, and it's being held this month. Actually, tomorrow it will be this month. It's being held in October. Yeah, they did the whole thing in a month. And they're having debates this week, and they have controversies of all sorts. And because I get Canadian TV, I'm able to see this and actually find out what's going on, because you certainly won't see it in American media coverage. Now, today was fascinating. Get this. Canada's opposition Liberal Party, they're not in power now. Stephen Harper is in power, and he's anything but a Liberal. But right now, they're lagging in polls. They're behind. But they alleged that Prime Minister Stephen Harper plagiarized a 2003 speech by former Australian Prime Minister John Howard on the U.S. invasion of Iraq. This is what we were going to play today. Unfortunately, I figured the internet connection would be up, and we'd be able to just go to the site and play the excerpts that show exactly what he did. But we'll have to tell you instead. In a speech to Parliament, while he was leader of the opposition Canadian Alliance, Harper made the case for Canada to support the U.S. in Iraq. Liberals say almost half of the speech was a word-for-word recitation of a speech by Howard 2 days earlier, and the party produced a video juxtaposing the two speeches. I'm sure if you go to YouTube, you'll be able to find it. Liberals have been arguing for over 2 years that Canada is losing its independent voice in foreign affairs under Mr. Harper. That's according to Bob Ray, the Liberals' foreign affairs critic before elections were called last month. We just had no idea that Mr. Harper was prepared to borrow the drafting of the actual words he would use from another country. Now, here are some examples. The original speech was given by John Howard to the House of Representatives in Australia. And let's see, let me read an excerpt here. This was on March 18, 2003. In 1991, the world judged that the Iraqi regime was a dangerous aggressor. In the interest of world peace and regional security, the community of nations required Iraq to surrender its offensive arsenal, its chemical and biological weapons, and abandon its nuclear weapons program. Iraq agreed to comply. Now, this is what Stephen Harper said 2 days later, March 20th, 2003. In 1991, after the invasion of Kuwait, the world judged the Iraqi regime to be a dangerous aggressor. In the interest of world peace and regional security, the community of nations expelled Iraq from Kuwait, required Iraq to surrender its offensive arsenal, its chemical and biological weapons, and to abandon its nuclear weapons program. Iraq agreed to comply with these demands. He added a few more words after that, but basically that whole middle part is word for word. How about this? Over the last 4 months, we have seen no evidence to suggest that Saddam Hussein is willing to comply with Resolution 1441. That was John Howard. This is Stephen Harper. After the last 4 months, we have seen no evidence to suggest that Saddam Hussein will willingly comply with Resolution 1441. Okay, it's a short sentence. Maybe it's possible that two people said almost exactly the same thing. So let's look at this longer sentence right here. Two sentences, actually. Maybe even three. We have waited 12 years for it to give action to that commitment. On 8 November 2002, the United Nations Security Council passed Resolution 1441, the 17th Security Council resolution on Iraq regarding the threat it poses to international peace and security. This resolution, which was adopted unanimously, gave Iraq a final opportunity to demonstrate immediate compliance with its disarmament obligations. Now, Stephen Harper said, we have waited 12 years for Saddam Hussein to give action to those commitments. With the threat of renewed action from the U.S., the U.K., and others, on November 8, 2002, yes, they have a different date format, the United Nations Security Council passed Resolution 1441. It was the 17th Security Council resolution regarding the threat Iraq posed to international peace and security. The resolution, which was adopted unanimously, gave Iraq a final opportunity to demonstrate immediate compliance with its disarmament obligations. Now, you know, if you wrote this as a paper for sixth grade, you would be busted so quickly. Yeah, a few words are shifted around, but this goes on for pages and pages, and it's almost entirely the same. So there was absolutely no question. This would be some kind of really fantastic coincidence if they just happened to write the same sentence structure and the exact same facts and everything like that. It's unbelievable. Now, of course, you can say this was the speechwriter. This was the person who actually wrote the speech for Stephen Harper. And didn't do any work on his own. But, you know, you have to ask yourself, well, the people that are working for me, are they good at what they do? Why do I hire them? There must be some issue of judgment there. Not to mention, if you're paying attention to what other world leaders are saying, you might recognize the words yourself. But get this, the Conservative Party, this is how they respond. Now, how would you respond if somebody working for you was busted in this way? Would you say, wow, that really sucks, that's not right, and this person should be out of here immediately? Thanks for bringing this to our attention. Definitely not cool. Something like that, you know? An honest reaction. This is what the Conservative Party said instead. They want to focus on a speech from 5 years, 2 elections, and 3 parliaments ago from a party that no longer exists. If this is what the liberals want to focus on, they can fill their boots, but we're not going to get drawn into this discussion. I mean, isn't that great? Take no responsibility whatsoever. Never admit wrongdoing. It was in the past, therefore, didn't happen. Into the memory hole. Well, as it turns out, the guy who actually did this, Owen Lippert, he was the war room strategist and the guy who put together that speech. He resigned today. In 2003, I worked in the office of the leader of the opposition, he said in a statement released by the Conservative campaign this afternoon. I was tasked with and wrote a speech for the then leader of the opposition. Pressed for time, I was overzealous in copying segments of another world leader's speech. Neither my superiors in the office of the leader of the opposition nor the leader of the opposition was aware that I had done so. The statement came after Stephen Harper was accused of plagiarizing nearly half of a speech he delivered in the Commons after the Liberals released a video Tuesday showing Harper's comments on Iraq, borrowing heavily from a speech given in Australia 2 days earlier by then Prime Minister John Howard. See, the thing is, if you're a leader of a country or a candidate for a leader of a country and you have the wool pulled over your eyes so successfully on something like this, might you not also have the wool pulled over your eyes in something a lot more important, such as the war itself? If you just believe willingly what people feed to you, doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of fact-checking going on. And plus, you know, if you're going to be saying something to people in your voice, shouldn't you want it to sort of suit your personality, have your own unique way of saying things? And that's certainly not what happened here. Almost word for word. It'd be interesting to see as sort of an experiment. You feed the same speech to all these different people in different countries. See how many of them actually fall for it. What's amazing is this happened in 2003, and it was not revealed until now, 5 years later. More than 5 years later. Now, imagine that this was a leader of Germany or a leader of Japan or something like that. Would you find it at all? It's in a different language. How would you ever know that the plagiarism even existed? How many times is this going on? How many times are people simply copying and pasting and not having any original thoughts or ideas of their own? How is it that it takes 5 years to uncover something that's in the same language? It's almost word for word. That is simply incredible. But that's Canadian election drama that's going on right now. And their election is going to be done before ours is. And their debates are happening this week. Now, what's interesting about their debates, this is something else that I really find kind of intriguing. They have 2 debates. One is on Wednesday. One is on Thursday. And the 2 debates are between all 5 party leaders, including the Green Party. Yes, they actually welcome the Green Party and they take part in the debates. But get this, the debate on Wednesday, what's different between the debate on Wednesday and the one on Thursday? The one on Wednesday is in French. The one on Thursday is in English. Yeah, they're bilingual. All the people running for these offices can easily speak both languages. So on Wednesday, they're going to be speaking French. On Thursday, they're going to be speaking English. Can you imagine that in our country? Can you imagine Bush? I know it's a bad example, but can you imagine Bush having a debate and saying, you know what, let's do Spanish today. We're going to talk completely in Spanish and being fluent in it. It just doesn't happen. That's the difference between our societies. One seems to be open to further education and being able to know and do more, except for maybe Stephen Harper, who can't write his own speeches to save his life. But he can speak French. I mean, that sort of vindicates him a little bit. Now, think of the four candidates running right now. Think of Barack Obama and Joe Biden and John McCain and Sarah Palin. And imagine any of them just speaking a different language fluently. Actually, you know what? I guess I could imagine Barack Obama doing that. I don't know if he knows any other languages. I could imagine him suddenly speaking at least a few sentences in some other language and scaring the crap out of everybody around him. But I don't know of any ability that he has, and I certainly don't have any ability that John McCain or Sarah Palin or Joe Biden has to suddenly start speaking in a foreign tongue. And we see that as a bad thing. We see that as something that's suspicious if you know another language. We actually do, because it connects you too strongly to some other culture. So, yeah, that's... And I can tell you, the debates that are going to happen this week up there, I guarantee they'll be a lot more interactive. There'll be people interrupting each other and addressing each other directly, and it'll be more impassioned. And we won't know what in God's name they're talking about, because it'll be issues that we're not familiar with. But here, in our country, it's all very structured and controlled. And certainly on Thursday, when the vice presidential debate happens between Sarah Palin and Joe Biden, she's going to be as protected as you can possibly be. Because we can't let her say too much or be exposed to too many hard questions. Did you see what happened in Philadelphia? Oh my God, this is incredible. Sarah Palin was out getting cheesesteaks, not by herself, obviously. She had the entire Western Hemisphere of media with her. But somehow this guy managed to ask a question. You could barely hear him. If you look at the video, he's way in the background, and she can hear him, and she's answering him. Actually, I don't know why, but she actually did answer him, or try to. And he was asking about basically the same thing that Barack Obama keeps getting asked about, namely, if we know that there's a certain terrorist in Pakistan, will we go and get him, even without Pakistan's permission? And she basically said, yeah, if it's to keep Americans safe, we got to do what we got to do. In direct contradiction to the words that John McCain was saying a couple of nights before during the debate between him and Barack Obama. Now, what's crazy about that is, you know, that John McCain would go into Japan to get somebody without the permission of the government. He would do whatever he wanted to do. And the only reason he brought that up to Barack Obama was because Barack Obama said it out loud. And in fact, McCain even said that. You don't say things like that out loud. you say it quietly to yourself. I can't believe nobody jumped on him for that. You don't say this out loud. You don't speak the truth out loud. You keep that to yourself. And Obama had a really good comeback for that, basically saying, well, you know what? You did sing that Bomb Iran song publicly. Didn't keep that to yourself. You guys remember that? Bomb, 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 bomb Iran or something to the tune of that song. Yeah. I wish there was an audio of that. I could play it out on the air too. But point is, there's all kinds of hypocrisy going on. So you had Sarah Palin saying this in the line for cheesesteaks. I don't think she was online though. I think she was at the very front. And basically saying the exact opposite and being called on it afterwards. So what happened was Senator McCain, and this is actually from a news story, Senator John McCain retracted Sarah Palin's stance. He retracted her stance on Pakistan Sunday morning after the Alaska governor appeared to back Barack Obama's support for unilateral strikes inside Pakistan against terrorists. She would not. She understands and has stated repeatedly that we're not going to do anything except in America's national security interest, McCain said to George Stephanopoulos. In all due respect, people going around and sticking a microphone while conversations are being held, and then all of a sudden, that's that person's position. This is a free country, but I don't think most Americans think that that's a definitive policy statement made by Governor Palin, Of course, you know, if Barack Obama had been caught saying something like that in a public place, he'd be all over it. Does anybody believe otherwise? Now, what was amazing was she was being interviewed last night on some news program. She was being interviewed. I think it was NBC this time. And she was asked that very question. Are you sorry for saying this? And then all of a sudden, while you're watching this question being asked to her, you hear a voice jumping in and saying this whole thing is just completely unfair. John McCain's sitting right next to her. He's part of this interview, and he basically is guiding the response before she even has a chance to address it herself. And so basically he says all of this. He comes out and says what she really meant to say, and then says, well, I'll let her say it in her own words, after he's already said it in his words. Who can lose a situation like that? So on Thursday, she won't have John McCain sitting next to her telling her what to say. Of course, what she will have is Joe Biden across the podium, and we just have to worry about what he's going to say, because he has a tendency of shooting from the hip and not really caring what other people think, which I guess is good in some instances, but not necessarily when you have a country enamored of Sarah Palin and all her incompetence. And I guess maybe it's unfair to say incompetence, because she's competent at what she does, which is being a mayor of a small town and a governor of a sparsely populated state and various other things. But anyone who can sit there and say that she's qualified to be vice president and president of the United States of America, you're playing without a full deck there. There's just no way you can have that kind of expertise suddenly foisted upon you. You just can't. No matter how many cool things you might say or how many people you can get on your side, it doesn't work that way. All right, and on that topic, let's take a look at the polls. Let's take a look at what's been happening in the last week or so. I'm not going to be here next week. Next week, I'm actually heading to Canada. Yeah, I feel drawn to all this. I just want to get away from this place for at least a week, and so I won't be commenting directly on the Sarah Palin Joe Biden debate. And we'll have another debate, actually. Will we have one more or two more? I think we'll have one more debate from McCain and Obama between now and the next show, and then another one will be happening the night of the next show, so that'll be in 2 weeks. Okay, so the Electoral College, this is what the situation is right now. Last week I was pretty upset because Obama only had a slim lead. He had 269 electoral votes versus McCain's 254. And before that, he was ahead 327 to 206. Then Sarah Palin was introduced into the scene, and all of a sudden, the gap was being narrowed. Well, the last poll I looked at showed Obama with a bit more of a lead now. It's 288 to 214. Still not big enough, and I don't understand how, with all this nonsense going on with the economy, with incompetent people running for offices of power, what people are basing their decision on. And I had to reach some conclusions here of what I'm going to do if this continues to go in a bad direction. If people don't wake up and come to their senses, you people in the swing states. I'm looking at the polls in the swing states right now, the most recent ones. Let's look at Ohio. Ohio shows in the most recent poll held on the 28th, 2 days ago, 47% of the people for Barack Obama, 48% of the people for John McCain. Florida, same day, 47 to 47, tied up. Minnesota, Barack Obama ahead by one, 48 to 47. So here's the situation. Florida's all tied up, and Ohio fell behind. Michigan's slightly ahead for Obama. North Carolina is slightly ahead for Obama. If these swing states do not come through, and if we actually wind up electing people who are completely unqualified and unsuitable for this position, for this country, in this particular time, and it's because people in the swing states did not work hard enough to get the vote out, to get people registered, to wake them up, because these are the people with the real power. Here in New York, Obama's going to win. We know this. So there's really not much more we can do. Places like Texas, places like Utah, there's really not much you can do because McCain's going to take the state no matter what. We know this. But there are those states that are neck and neck, and that's where people can make a real difference. The Floridas, the Michigans, the Ohios, the Virginias, Indiana even, Missouri, down 46 to 48. These are states where if you live in these places, by speaking out, by writing letters, by getting people to register to vote, by calling people, by getting together, organizing, you actually have a chance to sway public opinion, and in so doing, make a difference in the national election. But if we fail to do this, if all the people in these states fail to do this, then we have that hanging over our heads for the next 4 years. And this is the pledge I make. If this election is lost, and it's because of those swing states, I will boycott those swing states. Oh, I will. I will. I will not set foot in Pennsylvania. I will not set foot in Ohio. I will not set foot in whatever other state falls down on the job. Yeah, it'll be interesting. For the next 4 years, at least. And that's only, of course, if the election is lost. If the election's won, I'll just mock those places. But if the election is lost, and John McCain and Sarah Palin find themselves in power come January, and it's because 50 people didn't vote in the state of Indiana, and the electoral votes went the way of the Republicans, and they had a slim majority because of this, yeah, I'm going to be pretty pissed off and mad at the people there for not doing enough. I know there's people that listen in all these states. I know you all have the power to get out there and do something. So now's the time. Now's the time to do something. If you don't see a difference between the two parties at this stage, there's really not much more I can say. I mean, yeah, it's not a radical difference. But if it were a radical difference, then I don't think there'd be a chance. Because what a lot of people were saying after the debate on Friday, they were saying, why didn't Obama come out stronger? When McCain was basically saying how he was opposed to torture, why didn't he come and say, no, you're not, you voted for it? I can sort of understand why. There is a risk that you take if you come on too strong and attack people too viciously. You might turn off a lot of people in the process. Yeah, you'll be right. You'll say things that'll make you feel good. But you can't risk alienating that segment of the population that could make the difference. So if you take the high road and just continue maintaining your position and showing how you believe in certain things and the other person does not, that will score you more points than if you tear them to pieces with no mercy. At least that's the theory. That's the theory, and I hope it works out in this case. But no, I'm serious. I'm very serious about this. If this election is lost by a slim margin, and it's because of the swing states. You can, yeah, I won't be at Hamvention if Ohio loses. I won't go there. If, it'll make my life rather inconvenient too, because I won't even go on an airplane that has a stop in one of these states. All right, if I have to fly to California and the airplane decides that it's going to land in Virginia on the way, and Virginia swayed to McCain and the election was lost, I'll take a more expensive flight. That's just my little statement. But maybe if everybody did that, that would certainly have an effect. You got to do what you got to do, you know. All right, 631-632-9872 is our telephone number. Let's go into delay, and we'll hopefully take some phone calls. Again, 631-632-9872. 9872 is our phone number.
USB Stony Brook 90.1. Yeah.
I screwed it up. I'm sorry. I don't know what that's going to sound like, but I played the wrong thing at the wrong time and probably talked in the future. And yeah, okay, you know what? I messed it up even more because I didn't have this thing up, so now there's probably a long period of silence. I'm sorry. You know, this is too stressful. The SUVs out there and no internet. We still have no internet, right? Let's click this button again. Yeah, we're still down. But I think we have people out there. Somehow our stream is up, so I guess if we had to choose between the two, that would be the one to actually have. 601-632-9872 is our telephone number, and I'd like to hear from people out there, their views, their opinions. Oh, we have a lot of calls, so let's take some. Good evening, you're on Off the Wall.
Hey, John.
How you doing? Where are you calling from?
From ISUP Terrace. I have a couple questions about the financial breakdown for this fellow, and I'd like to ask him.
Okay, well, you're on the air right now, and if you're asking about financial stuff, don't expect much in the way of informed comment, but go ahead.
Well, we're on the air now. I do have a couple questions. And also, I want to tell you something. It's very enjoyable listening to you. It's so nice listening to an opinionated person, and it's very cool.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Here's the question that I have.
Uh-huh.
Is that let's look at physics. You know, let's go back to high school, and there is a...
God, I hated physics in high school, but okay.
No, I know, me too. Mr. Pawanda, that's what I had at Wayne Hills High School in Wayne, New Jersey.
I had Mr. Verlandre in Ward Revel High School. Can't believe I remember. I remember that.
There we go. We have a connection already.
I remember that. I don't remember a single bit of physics, but I remember that. Okay, so what's
your point? Let's look at it like this. Is that there's a finite amount of matter that in this generation, the matter is a Toyota. And five generations from now, the matter is going to be a basketball. There's a finite amount of matter.
Uh-huh.
So is there not a finite amount of money in the system? And the reason why I ask that is that there was all these companies that had this money, and now it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that money?
Yeah,
where is
yeah.
that money?
You know, I've always wondered about things like that, printing more money. Does that make, how do they solve problems by doing things like this? But yeah, as you say, there is a finite amount. And where does it go?
Where does it go? And also, I wonder as well, is that these folks that have bought houses that they really couldn't afford.
Mm-hmm.
There's some people down the street from us. We bought our house in ISUP Terrace, of course, on Long Island, at $162,000. And now it's, I don't know, probably worth $300,000 or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And so the people down the street from us bought their house at $425,000.
Wow.
There is no way that house is worth $425,000.
Uh-huh.
So they're paying a mortgage on a $425,000 house that's just come down in price. And so if they would lose their house, and heaven forbid, I hope they don't,
mm-hmm.
Do they not owe that money anymore? What happens to that? You
know, well,
where does it go?
If they declare bankruptcy, then they wouldn't, and the house would go back to the bank. I think when you default on a mortgage, that's it. You lose your house, and you don't owe the money anymore.
Yeah.
It's sad, but
you
know, that's the reality.
You jokingly say you're not going to go into those states if they don't vote for the proper presidential candidate.
Oh, I'm not joking. I won't go.
I am from the Midwest. And in fact, I just came from Indiana yesterday. We were out in the Midwest to visit some relatives.
Uh-huh.
And it is, there's a lot of people that are going to vote for McCain and Palin. And it's very scary because she's totally unqualified to be facing down Vladimir Putin over a walnut table somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And but there's people that are saying, well, what do you mean? She was the mayor of a town. She's mayor of a town that's three times as big as my brother's high school class.
Mm-hmm.
Scary.
Yeah, I mean, we all know somebody who is more qualified than her. And I, you know, it doesn't give me much joy to say that because I'm sure she's a perfectly nice person, but she is not qualified for this. And, you know, people are fooling themselves if they believe that just because she says, you know, certain key words at certain times. You need qualifications. I don't know what McCain was thinking. It shows his desperation that he does things like this or does things like suspends his campaign and runs back to Washington when he really couldn't help at all in that situation. These are not rational decisions.
Well, you know what I think about you know, him suspending his campaign? Well, you know what? He's a senator. He should have been there. And what I look at is for the last 2.5 years, three states haven't had two senators, New York, Illinois, and Arizona. If you right now said to your boss, boss, I'm going to be going off for a couple years, and I'm not going to be doing anything that you want me to do, you get fired.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's a problem with the system. And I think if you announce candidacy, you should immediately not be that senator anymore, and somebody else should take your place.
Yeah, that's an excellent idea. Excellent idea. And you know, it's not the money. I mean, who cares? I mean, what are they being paid? A couple $100,000? That doesn't matter at all. Instead, New York went without representation from Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Illinois has gone for no representation from Barack Obama. And the same with Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. And, you know, they say, well, you know, they went back to Washington to suspend their campaign, and my goodness, what heroes. Give me a break.
Yeah.
They should be there anyway. They should be a senator, and they should not be doing this stuff.
Yeah, the point is that McCain was not part of any of the committees discussing this in the first place, so his presence there wasn't any more vital than anybody else's presence, and by going there in that way, he injected all these politics into it that weren't there to start with, and people started trenching down with their positions, and it just got a lot more difficult.
You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of a firefighter that starts a fire and then stands there and watches it burn and then climbs on the fire truck to come and be the hero. George Bush went on the radio today, and I didn't listen to it. I don't know what he said, and I don't care what he said.
Mm-hmm.
They should have been taking care of this 5 or 6 years ago.
Absolutely. Listen,
they're too late. Too little too late.
I agree. Thanks for your call. We're going to try to take some more.
Yeah, we'll be listening.
All right, take care. And good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi, Emmanuel.
Hi, where are you calling from?
Columbus, Ohio. Swing State.
Ohio, okay. So you're the guy in charge now.
That's right.
We're going to give you the responsibility of talking sense to people out there.
I try. My little piece of the pie is, I have an extensive family listserv, and I try to give them a new fact about Sarah Palin's stupidity every day.
Uh-huh. Cool. How do you think things are going to go out there?
I really don't know. I hate to say it, but I think that shadow 6%, 5% that won't admit their racism be more of a problem than people give it credit for.
Yeah, I think that's one of the main reasons people don't want to vote for Obama is because of the race thing. And of course, they won't admit that outwardly, but I think a lot of people will show up on election day and vote their color rather than their feelings.
And I've heard a lot of things like code language, like I'm not ready to vote for a black man, or stuff like this. It's like, I think you've actually talked about that before. Like, it's completely racist, but it's a way that they can get around saying I'm a racist and therefore I won't vote for Obama.
It's insane because there are so many people around that say, oh, there's no racism involved here. How can people say that when we all know people who believe what you just said, that they're not ready to vote for a black man? That's an insane statement. And in most parts of the world, it would be completely not taken seriously. But here, it's like it's reality. And yeah, you know, we need to realize that if Barack Obama is not ahead by, say, at least 10 points in the polls, there's a very good chance that these shadow people, as you call them, will come out on election day and he'll lose because of that.
Exactly. And that's what I think is going to happen, unfortunately. But I am optimistic. But I wanted to talk about the where this money comes from and the matter in the universe and all that stuff.
Okay.
It's very different than matter in the universe. It's leverage, when you bring leverage into the game, I'm not like an economist or anything, but just like having followed Karma Bank Radio and like some other kind of underground people that are talking about what's really happening, these companies are just so highly leveraged. They're working with money that doesn't really exist. So,
right.
And Max Keiser on Karma Bank Radio says that there's actually $100 trillion in derivative products, so that like because people are so highly leveraged, they're gambling with money that they don't have, and then when it becomes a derivative product, then it's like someone else's wager that they are then using as like their capital on which they leverage. And then that's why it's so scary, because it's like a house of cards. And since we don't make anything and we don't really, I mean, we make some things, but you know what I mean?
Right. You got to just try and stay away from all this, hypothetical money business and the trillions of dollars in debt and things like that, and just make sure that you can live within your means and that you have a way out of all this nonsense when things do hit the fan, as it seems like they're going to do at some point.
I think you're right, and I think that we could all kind of draw back our lifestyles and think about what we really need to be happy.
Yeah, and still be happy. You don't need all this nonsense. You don't need all these expensive things like people are addicted to be happy. That's the real secret. Listen, we're out of time, but please promise me that you'll try to wake people up there, and maybe we can turn things around.
You're my favorite podcast, and I really love listening to you. Now I listen to you live every week.
Okay, great. Well, thanks. Good to have you.
All right.
Take care. And yes, that's right. We're a podcast as well as a broadcast on a real radio station. That's something. Oh, speaking of the real radio station, WUSB has been nominated as the best college radio station in the country. And you can vote for it by going to www.mtvu.com. Yes, MTVU, that's the University MTV people. And you can vote for us there. Please tell all your friends and make sure that we win because, yeah, I think we are the best college radio station in the country. It's nice to have some recognition. All right, that's it for me. I'm out of here, going to Canada next week. Need a break. Got to get out of here. Everybody needs a holiday, after all. And you can write to us, otw@2600.com, with your comments. And please send them in. We like to hear them and read them and do all kinds of things with them. Again, otw@2600.com. We'll see you next 2 weeks. Good night.
Please, I don't want a vacation. I just want to get away for good.
Kids, you're listening to Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB in Stony Brook. This is brand new from TV on the Radio.